Welcome, everybody. Today we are rolling out our Blue Ribbon panel's results on our goal to build the first Hyperloop in the nation. It's about 175 pages of light reading, but once again we continue to, as I would say, lead the nation in our aggressive pursuit of this new technology. Last year, Black & Veatch and Olson unveiled the first feasibility study in the country. With the report from this Blue Ribbon panel, we're the first state in the country to sort of jump in front of whatever RFP that Virgin will be putting out shortly. Our goal today, again, is to build this technology in Missouri. The first step would be a certification track. That proposal, or that request proposal, will likely be released soon. There's some statutory changes, some minor ones that we will likely have to make in our proposal, because as we envision it, a certification track would likely require a P3 public-private partnership. We'll tweak the language on that, we'll do some work on easements, but again, our goal on this report was to sort of pre-prepare for any proposals that go out. Obviously, the long-term goal is to build a Hyperloop from St. Louis to Kansas City, connect two major metropolitan areas, the second and third largest rail hubs in the United States. And I was reminded as we were coming in today that 54 years ago today is when they finished the St. Louis Arch. We always call St. Louis the gateway to the West. With building the Hyperloop in Missouri, we become the gateway to the world. And that's our goal at the end of the day. I remind everybody that Missouri has long been a leader in innovation in transportation. The Pony Express in St. Joe, the beginning of the Santa Fe Trail, Route 66, the first mile of the interstate system was laid in Missouri. First steel suspension bridge in the United States was laid in Missouri. We've always sort of been on the cutting edge of this type of thing, and I think the Hyperloop is exactly that. It's the next step in transportation, and it's the next place that we can sort of lead the country. And so with that, I'm going to call up the vice chair of the Blue Ribbon panel, Andrew Smith. He's going to go into a little bit more detail about kind of what work they've done and what they're going to do.
Well, thank you for being here today. It's a very exciting day, I think, for St. Louis and for Missouri. As we have the arch behind us, and as the speaker said, we celebrate the 54th anniversary of this great monument that indicates our position as the gateway to the West. I'm really just here to support the speaker, the treasurer, and Senator Williams, all of whom have put in significant effort into this report. And as the speaker said, it's not necessarily light reading. It's about 200 pages. So we decided to go as deep as we possibly could. I think this is probably the most comprehensive treatment of Hyperloop economics, regulation, and funding that has been produced anywhere in the world to date. And that's very much in keeping with what Missouri has done since the beginning of our involvement in this technology. We were the first state in North America to produce a feasibility study. If you look anywhere in the country today, you'll find a lot of people talking about how transformative this technology is and can be for their region. And they're right. But what you won't find anywhere other than Missouri is a Speaker of the House, a Director of Transportation, Director of Economic Development, a number of state legislators who have actually committed their time and energy into really studying how do you build something like this. The feasibility study that Black & Veatch produced was the beginning of our work, and it answered the question, can it be done? And the answer to that question was yes, absolutely, it can be done. The technology is viable, and it could be commercially feasible in the state of Missouri. The question we sought to answer in this report is how can it be done? And in a lot of ways, that's a more interesting, more challenging question. And I expect we'll have a lot of questions about it coming from the public and from interested parties over the next several months. Our goal is to prepare Missouri to make the most robust response possible to the coming RFP from Virgin Hyperloop One to build the first certification track in North America. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to the treasurer of the state of Missouri, Scott Fitzpatrick. Thank you.
Thanks, Andrew. Good to be here with you all today. Sorry we're running a little bit behind, but we've been across the state today to talk about Hyperloop and what Hyperloop could mean to the state of Missouri. And I'm here today just to show my support for the idea, for the project, for the work of the legislature, as particular Speaker Haar, Senator Williams, Lieutenant Governor Kehoe, and all the members of the Blue Ribbon panel, as well as engineering firms Black & Veatch and Olson, that gave of their time and efforts to produce the feasibility study. And so I'm just here to speak on behalf of what I think is a great effort, a great project, and something that I think could be transformative for Missouri. As the speaker said, you know, we're here at the Gateway to the West. We have the arch behind us that was completed 54 years ago today. When you look at Kansas City on the other side of the state, you know, Kansas City kind of is what it is because they were the first ones to get a bridge built across what is now the Buck O'Neill Bridge, built across the Missouri River, its first crossing point in that area, and which is what led to Kansas City becoming a large economic hub for the state. And then in between it, we have the University of Missouri system in Columbia that's well poised and positioned to contribute from a research aspect, and you know, with a great engineering school both at University of Missouri and in Rolla, in Columbia and in Rolla. And it's just this is the next kind of thing in transportation that I think we should get behind as a state, and I'm here to support that. Now that, you know, we're awaiting the RFP to be released, you know, I will be lending my time as necessary to try to help formulate any portion of a state response to that from my role in the treasurer's office and with our staff. But I really think that this is, you know, this is a visionary idea, and when I think about you know, visionaries, and I've said it all across the state, but I think back to, you know, Henry Ford, who's obviously credited with, you know, developing what is now, you know, what became the mass production automobile. And, you know, he's attributed with the quote, if I had asked people what they wanted, they'd have said faster horses. And I think this is a perfect example of that. This is the thing that not a lot of people know about yet, but we're out here talking about it now. It's an idea that's been proven to work. That can work, the technology will work, and now we just need to do what we can to make sure that Missouri is the place where not the test track, but the certification track is located. So I'll be doing what I can to support that, and I will now introduce Senator Brian Williams, who I believe was also on the task force and contributed to that effort. So with that, Senator Williams.
Good afternoon. Senator Brian Williams, I just wanted to, talk about the process a little bit. The governor, lieutenant governor, as well as the speaker, felt it was important to diversify this panel and make sure that the panel had voices from various parts of the state as well as the region. So that's why I'm here, is to be able to not only be an advocate for St. Louis and ensure that it's a process that includes practical and inclusive steps to ensure that we have access to fast rail transportation, but also opportunities to make sure St. Louis is at the table when it comes to innovation, and that's something I believe in. Also to be able to have members of this panel from various parts of the state, various backgrounds, and to be able to talk about the importance of Missouri. And that's what this is about. So I'm happy to be a part of this panel. I'm glad that my colleagues in the General Assembly felt that it would suit to bring a voice and advocate for this region, ultimately to make the state better. So I look forward to seeing the outcome of this process. Clearly, it's important to me to make sure that all the right pieces are at the table. I think we've taken those steps, and if it's something I think serves in the interest of the public, I will be on board, and I'm looking forward to seeing how this process goes. Thank you for being here.
That's pretty much, that's essentially all from us, but we want to know if anybody has questions.
Sure.
Fire away.
What is the earliest possible a full Hyperloop system could be implemented in the state?
It's hard to say on a full Hyperloop. We expect the request for proposal to come out in the next few weeks. Our expectation on the timeline of that is that by first or second quarter of next year, they will select one, construction, and begin with hopefully within a year. A lot of the R&D that they will do on the certification track will dictate how soon we have a full Hyperloop from there.
And then for the test track portion, what's kind of the timeline potentially for that?
The certification track, again, that would be that they'll select probably by first or second quarter of next year, and then building will be coming after that.
When you say public-private partnership, what is the public aspect of that? How would state resources go to support this project?
So it's hard to say at this point because we haven't even seen the request for proposal yet. So we're sort of waiting to see that before we get an idea. But we understand, obviously, there's going to be a lot of private interest that will do this, but this is not something that we completely built on private dollars. It will be some public portion, either from the state or from the locales that produce a proposal for this. We just, again, without having seen the RFP, we don't know what that'll look like yet.
And there may be people who see the needs of conventional transportation, like highways and roads, as a more pressing matter than the Hyperloop. What would you say to that criticism?
So I'd say two things. Number one, this legislative assembly, for the first time in two decades, put $500 million of new money into MoDOT that they had not had previously. Some from general revenue, some from bonding proposal, and then some we leveraged from federal money. And that's, again, that's the first time in two decades we've had new money to go in. So we're very cognizant of building and keeping our roads and bridges as is. The second portion of that is that building a Hyperloop would alleviate a lot of the problems that we have with our interstate system. The wear and tear, the human cost of accidents would go down significantly. Third and most importantly, eventually we are going to need another form of transportation. Just like we saw when we saw, you know, we went from horse and buggy to the modern car, to building an interstate system, rail, steamboat. We've gone through a variety of different ways to transport citizens across the country. This, in our mind, is sort of the next step in that technology, and us building it first puts us in a place where not only we're the center of the country in research and design, we're also once again on the cutting edge of just moving people and freight across the state.
Is the state of Missouri considering putting public money into the certification track component of it as well?
Well, again, the proposal for a certification track would not be for a full track, it'd just simply be for something probably 10 to 12 miles long. My expectation is that there will be more than one bid from the state of Missouri, that our goal as the state is to ensure that wherever it ends up, that it ends up in one of the locales in Missouri. And so, again, without seeing the RFP, it's too soon to tell what that would look like.
And that's obviously over a wide, you know, swath of land. So, you know, how would that potentially look like? Would it be potentially on the track that the Hyperloop might eventually go in? Or?
Our expectation is that once the certification track has been named, that a full track would be built off that. Once you go past mile one, it doesn't make sense to start over somewhere else. So if you build a 12-mile track, let's say hypothetically we were building in St. Louis, the idea that we had is that we could go west to Kansas City, but we could also go to Chicago, we could go to Minneapolis, we could go to Atlanta. It gives us a lot of ways that we can build, and we think we'd build off that certification track. But again, it's important, as we've said, there's no prize for second place in this battle, because once you build 12 miles of track, that's where you're going to build off of when you build that first full Hyperloop.
Did the report indicate whether the Hyperloop would be operated by Virgin, basically, or would it be operated by, when you say private partnership, the state would help in operating it as well?
Sure. So, I mean, again, I think it's early for us to speculate about who a potential operator would be. Certainly, if you look at Virgin, they're active in operating private infrastructure. You look at what they're doing in Florida with the Brightline, running from Miami to Orlando. You know, that's an instance where they're a funder and an operator. What I'd like to point out, though, is that, you know, when we're talking about building a Hyperloop, a commercial Hyperloop, it's about more than just moving people. It's about moving goods. And in a lot of ways, the business model around moving goods could potentially be as attractive or more attractive than moving people. And so when you look at a company like Virgin Hyperloop One, Richard Branson is an investor, Virgin is an investor, but the primary investor behind them is actually one of the largest port operators in the world, Dubai Ports World. And there's a reason for that, right? I mean, they're in the business of moving goods and trying to do so quickly and efficiently. A long-winded way of saying, we don't know who the operator would be. We know that there would have to be some state involvement to protect taxpayer interests and to work with MoDOT to deal with things like right-of-way access, and regulation. But the operator could be somebody who is currently capitalized or even a new entity.
The reason I ask that question is, obviously there's going to be a cost for either goods or people to ride this. Has that been determined, like what the cost to actually use this would be, or are we liaised in the process for that?
So there have been estimates that have been put out there. One of the estimates that was in the Black & Veatch and Olson feasibility study said that for a passenger to go between Kansas City and St. Louis, it would essentially be the cost of a tank of gas, right? So $30, pretty reasonable. But, you know, again, there are other models out there. I mean, if somebody is traveling on a daily basis or a weekly basis, there could be a pass system that they buy into. We just don't know. I think it's far too soon to speculate about what rates would be.